This webcast is made possible by the listener members of the Classical Network and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support. Between the Keys is an exclusive production of the Classical Network and WWFM.org. Funding for this program is provided in part by listener members like you. This is Jed Disler, Artist in Residence for the Classical Network, and welcome again to Between the Keys. The music you're hearing in the background has been played by Andrzej Tchaikovsky, who is a Polish-born British pianist and composer who died prematurely, unfortunately, at the age of 46 in 1981. We are going to be exploring the legacy of Andrzej Tchaikovsky this hour on Between the Keys, and I am so happy to have back with me as co-host and my partner in crime, the distinguished Toronto-based pianist and writer Stephen Sierra. I'm so happy you're here, Stephen. Welcome.
It's great to be here. Thank you, Jeff.
You know, Andrzej Tchaikovsky is not a name that we encounter very much these days, and certainly among younger listeners, I don't think he's that well known, although Sony BMG just brought out a box set of his recordings. But I have to tell you that he's a pianist and a composer who I'm admittedly not all that familiar with.
He was a phenomenon. He was like a shooting star in a sense. In fact, no less a musician than Daniel Barenboim a few years ago in an interview described him as the greatest pianistic talent of his generation, along with Ashkenazi and Radu Lupu. He put him in that category.
Wow.
I think part of the fascination with him is that his life story, which was extraordinary. He actually was in the Warsaw Ghetto when he was a child and was smuggled around by his grandmother to different locations, managed to survive and get out. He was also, it turned out to be, an extremely well-trained and very, very expert pianist, and also a composer of considerable substance.
So who did he study with?
I do know that he was taken under the wing of Arthur Rubinstein when he was in his late teens, and undoubtedly he received some coaching there.
What was the big competition that he was in? I can't remember.
He met Rubinstein at the 1955 Warsaw Chopin Competition.
Oh, yes.
Where he got a prize, not one of the top prizes, but a prize, and Rubinstein urged him to enter, at that point, the Queen Elizabeth Competition the next year, 1956, mm-hmm. where he was in very distinguished company when he took third prize. The grand prize winner was Ashkenazi, and second prize, John Browning. So that's a pretty distinguished company to be in.
Indeed. Well, we'll have to talk more about the Rubinstein connection, but I think we should hear some music. From what I read, Andrzej Tchaikovsky recorded Bach's Goldberg Variations, I believe, in 1957, and a few years after the famous Glenn Gould recording. And this is just based on what I read. There's a fabulous Andrzej Tchaikovsky website that leaves no stone unturned, so to speak. And it talked about how the Goldbergs were a difficult session where there were tons and tons and tons of takes, and it was never released. But he did eventually record the Goldbergs for French Columbia in 1964. I thought we could listen to some selections from this. So let's listen to Andrzej Tchaikovsky play Bach. Thank you. just heard excerpts from J.S. Bach's Goldberg Variations, performed by our featured artist this hour, Andre Tchaikovsky. And I'm here with Stephen Sera. And before we met, you were telling me a lot about Andre Tchaikovsky's rather stimulating personality. And I wanted you to elaborate on this and how it possibly connects with his Bach playing.
He was one of those artists who didn't make things easier for himself in terms of a career. He was apparently quite difficult. Even though he gave about 500 concerts in the U.S., he apparently never liked being in the U.S. He didn't like recording sessions per se. He much preferred live performances. And he always demanded great affection and love from those for whom he played, including audiences. If the applause was not a suitable ovation, he tended to want to get back at the audience and unleash his wrath, so to speak. If people didn't listen attentively or if latecomers came in noisily, he was very upset. Apparently, at one of the recitals he gave in Spain, the applause was not sufficient, so the punishment he chose was to play the entire Bach-Goldberg Variations as an encore.
Well, I think the next selection is something that is relatively familiar in that it's been reissued several times. Andre Tchaikovsky made only two concerto recordings with Fritz Reiner and the Chicago Symphony, the Mozart Concerto in C Major, Kerschel 503. He also recorded a Bach concerto that was not released during Fritz Reiner's lifetime. I don't remember the reason for that, but I think this may be the only Mozart piano concerto that Fritz Reiner recorded, if I'm not mistaken.
It's a treat to hear Reiner conducting Mozart, because he was a wonderful conductor, as we know, but we don't really associate him in the Chicago Symphony with Mozart. But we're going to hear the finale of the Mozart piano concerto in C, Kerschel 503, with some really very, very beautiful, polished, and insightful playing by both pianist and orchestra.
All right, let's listen.
Thank you.
We just heard the third movement finale from Mozart's Piano Concerto No. 25 in C major, Kerschel 503, the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Fritz Reiner, and the piano soloist was our featured artist this hour on Between the Keys, Andrei Tchaikovsky. Stephen Cira, I am so glad that you suggested that we hear this recording. And one thing that I noticed when I listened to this again, I had not really heard it in many, many years, was the oboe solos with Ray Still, who was the famous principal oboist in the Chicago Symphony, and how he and Tchaikovsky are really going back and forth and dovetailing each other in conversation. And I wonder if this is something that just happened spontaneously, or do you think that this was really worked out?
I think both Andrei Tchaikovsky and Ray Still, being consummate musicians on their respective instruments, they had a wonderful sense of the Mozart style, which means always singing, really. The cantabile singing line is so implicit in Mozart always. And that there's that beautiful episode in the finale where they have to match each other in terms of the singing line, and they do so wonderfully well.
I'm wondering why Andrei Tchaikovsky did not make more recordings with Fritz Reiner. When you think of Van Cliburn, made many. Of course, Cliburn was the superstar, and Byron Janis. But why only this one, and then the Bach? Do you know anything about that?
Not specifically, other than the fact that I know that Andrei Tchaikovsky did not like recording. He didn't like the process of recording in a studio, and he also didn't like coming to the U.S. So those two reasons could be he was sometimes not his best friend.
Yes, but he did manage to make a good many studio recordings. Not a huge discography, but one recording that he made for RCA Victor is an all Chopin disc, and curiously, he does not play all 24 Chopin preludes, but only a selection of them. This kind of connects back with Rubinstein, maybe.
Well, certainly the RCA connection, we might assume, had to do with Rubinstein, who was, of course, a famous RCA recording artist. My understanding is that he did record most, if not all, of the Chopin preludes, but only these 10 were approved by him for release.
So we're going to hear a selection of Chopin preludes with Andrei Tchaikovsky. Thank you. Well, you just heard a selection of Chopin preludes with our featured artist this hour on Between the Keys, Andrei Tchaikovsky, and I'm here with Stephen Sera. I'm kind of impressed with how this is not Chopin playing that comes out of any kind of received opinion. And when you think about what even his colleagues were doing around 1955, when you think of the young Ashkenazi or the young John Browning or Adam Horacevitz. This is a little bit different. It seems like a little drier to me. I don't know.
I hear an analytical element in his playing because, of course, he was a composer. I think he was a wonderful musician. That element comes through in his playing. It's very clear, transparent Chopin. Less pedal, I think, than a lot of pianists use. Everything is just laid out with tremendous clarity and transparency of voicing and refinement. But you're right, it's very individual playing. It's not like anyone else. But for me, it's convincing.
In a way, it's almost as if somebody took out the sheet music of the Chopin preludes and is taking the markings on faith and not taking into consideration any of the tradition. But maybe, maybe I'm simplifying.
We can't ignore the fact that there's abundant feeling in his playing. It's not just cold, dry playing. It's definitely got an emotional content that is persuasive.
You are listening to Between the Keys here on the Classical Network, and I am Jed Disler, and I am here with my co-host Stephen Sera. We were talking earlier about Andrei Tchaikovsky's spiky personality, and when you talk about his desire to shock in saying controversial things, was this something that you think was calculated, or he just couldn't help himself?
I think it was a part of his character, and it was an element of his character that somehow seems to me to align him very well with the composer Prokofiev, who we're going to hear next.
He recorded a selection of the Evasion Fugitive, so let's listen to Andrei Tchaikovsky play Prokofiev. Pianist Andrei Tchaikovsky playing a group of Evasion Fugitive by Sergei Prokofiev. And these are newly reissued in a box set from Sony BMG, encompassing all of this pianist's recordings for RCA Victor. What I found interesting about these performances is that they had the kind of caustic and spiky element that you were talking about in his personality. Yet at the same time, there's a lot of color and lyricism, which is something that many Prokofiev pianists do not bring. I'm thinking that a pianist like Sviatoslav Richter, I think, had a lyricism that he brought to Prokofiev that really enhances the music.
I also remember reading somewhere one of Richter's reminiscences of Prokofiev. Of course, the two men knew each other. And Richter writes that for him, Prokofiev always had a mischievous gleam in his eye. and some of that element comes through in his music. And I think that same mischievous glint is characteristic of Tchaikovsky's own playing.
The last years of Andrei Tchaikovsky's life were very difficult. He was stricken with cancer and he died, I believe it was 1981.
He was living at the end of his life in his adopted country of England. His home was in London, but at the very end of his life, he died in a hospice in Oxford. He had a very tragic early death. He composed his will before he passed away, and there was one very unusual aspect of that which came out after his death, which is that he bequeathed his skull to the Royal Shakespeare Company in London. Apparently the reason was that he always wanted part of himself to be on the stage. And in fact, the skull is used to this day in productions of Hamlet.
Oh my goodness. That's really amazing. We haven't really spoken about Andrei Tchaikovsky as composer, but that's actually what we have next. He was quite prolific, wasn't he?
He wrote a lot of music in a lot of different genres throughout his career. His catalog includes chamber music and songs and solo piano music, string quartets, and his final work was an opera based on The Merchant of Venice by Shakespeare that has actually been produced, I believe, in Bregenz.
Did they use his skull in the production?
I don't think there's a skull needed in the Merchant of Venice. It's not alas, poor Yorick as in Hamlet.
He wrote several piano concertos. One of them, his second piano concerto, was performed by Rado Lupu, who ordinarily we don't associate him with contemporary music, but there is this live recording from a broadcast that exists. So let's hear an excerpt from the second piano concerto, which is a work from 1971. We just heard an excerpt from the Piano Concerto No. 2 for Piano and Orchestra by Andrei Tchaikovsky, a work written in 1971, and that comes from a live performance with Rado Lupu at the piano, the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra under Yuri Siegel, and that was recorded live in 1975. What did you think, Stephen Sierra, when you first heard this concerto? You must have been surprised, I guess.
I had no idea what to expect. For me, it betrayed its Eastern European roots. He was, of course, a Polish composer. He wrote in an idiom that I would describe as a modernist, expressionist idiom. There's an obvious influence of Bartok. The piano writing, of course, is extremely expert and knowing of the instrument. And there's a lot of variety of texture in the piano writing. Some of it is pointillistic, percussive at times. It's quite a complicated piece. It's a complicated part, and the orchestra part is very difficult, obviously.
I wonder if this piece has been played since then or his other concertos.
I'm not aware, but it may be one of those works that is languishing in obscurity, just waiting to be taken up. Who knows? Some composers are discovered long after their deaths, as you know.
And I think because he died young and because, as you say, he was his worst enemy, maybe now, you know, it would be a great time to reevaluate his music. But there is a fantastic website devoted to Andrei Tchaikovsky, and many MP3s of out-of-print recordings are up on there. And you certainly have whet my appetite to explore more of his piano legacy as well as the compositional legacy. You've really opened up my ears to something new, and I would say you've done so for our listening audience. So, Stephen Sierra, I really appreciate you coming here and sharing the Andrei Tchaikovsky legacy. Thank you so much, and I hope we can do another show again soon.
Thank you so much, Jed.